Thanks, Celine. Thanks, Luca, for this nice opportunity, and to everybody for the very nice conference. So I want to present some work in progress with Michele, which is a follow-up of the work he presented. He said a few words about Young Mills on the spaceflight case, and here I'm addressing the null case. So we'll be on a null surface, as this picture wants to emphasize. So let me give the general setup you're working on. So we have in mind a space-time manifold M bounded by, in a cone essentially, so bounded by two space-like surfaces and the null boundary around. I call it scry. All computations are done at finite size. In four dimensions, things are conformal, so there isn't much of a difference for electromagnetism. But I will call it scry because so we keep in mind that is a null surface. So here we have our null surface with corners, and the corners are two copies of the spheres over here. Now, what is the punchline of the talk? So we have the first one and main one is that the fully gauge-reduced radiative phase space at scry is a collection of super-selection sectors labeled by initial and final gauge orbits of the electric fluxes through the corners S in and S final. So let me unpack this sentence. Fully gauge reduced means that it's gauge reduced even with respect to gauge transformation that act at the two corners, so at the two spheres. The fact that is a collection, the radiative phase space is a collection of superselection sectors means the following. So it's a Poisson, it's not a symplectic manifold, this radiative phase space, but it's a Poisson manifold. And its symplectic leaves are what we call superselection sectors, which are labeled by these gauge orbits. So here is important to talk about gauge orbit rather than just the fluxes so that we are sure to be fully gauge invariant, manifestly gauge invariant from the beginning to the end. Other results that I will discuss on the way is that in the abelian theory, and in the absence of magnetic fluxes through S, we can take one of the superselection labels to be the electromagnetic memory. And after, if we focus instead of this fully reduced phase space, but just on the constraint reduced phase space, so Michele was talking about two steps in the reduction, so after the first reduction, what we obtain is what one could call an extended phase space in certain ways, but here is obtained constructively by reducing something, not by adding anything, where soft charges generate the residual corner gauge symmetries. And on the way, there will be some other results. So let's start. So this is the usual setup. I don't have to say much. I just call U the coordinate along the cone. For me, is a compact interval. And then I have spheres with x coordinates on the sphere. These are notations for the volume elements, and the metric is time independent. So now let's look, we have space-time, let's look at field space. Field space in the bulk, in the space-time bulk, we have a Young-Mills theory, usual Young-Mills theory. And as we all know, we have this presymplectic current on the bulk field phase, the space of bulk fields, which is just delta star f delta a. So how do we obtain a phase space on scry? So this will be the off-shell phase space because I will not be talking about constraints yet. So we pull this back on scry and we do presymplectic reduction. So this will give us the following off-shell phase space where we have connection on scry and electric fields. I call them E. And what are they? They are the FUR component from the bulk perspective. I just give it another name because here after presymplectic reduction, this is what one should do. So this is the usual thing. Let me comment briefly on this symplectic structure over here. Well, one can, by construction, is actually non-degenerate because we did presymplectic reduction. But is non-ultralocal because this FUI in reality is a derivative of my delta A. So this is the way it should be understood, because this derivative is along my manifold, not normal to the manifold. So it's really a non-ultralocal structure, which does not have an obvious cotangent bundle form. Okay, next step, symmetries. So this is just to fix notation. This box in the drawings would be my off-shell phase space. I put the gauge orbits vertically like this. Rho is the infinitesimal action, and which is the usual one, so no surprises there. The important point is that this action is locally, here the key word is locally Hamiltonian, which means that this Hamiltonian flow equation holds pointwise, so at the level of densities. So here we see that this is a there is the volume form. So this is a top form on Scry. And this is the starting point of Michaelis-Stokes. So once you encounter this situation, you can apply the theory we developed from the beginning to the end and just compute. So this is what I'm going to do next. So let's go through this exercise. So we have our momentum form, which is a momentum map, but since it's a density, we call it a form, which is dual valued, it's elements in the Lie algebra. And we show that this form can be decomposed uniquely into two pieces. The result is not very surprising. There is the constraint piece, which is C infinity linear in Xi. This is how we isolated from the momentum form. So this gives the Gauss constraint on Scry. And then there is the remainder boundary term, which we call a flux form. It's not the flux in the sense of flux radiation, not quite, but it's a flux in the sense of the Gauss-Stokes theorem. It's just the boundary piece, the corner piece. Okay, let's study the two pieces one by one. So the easy one is the constraint because we all know what it is. Just let I call C the vanishing locus of the Gauss constraint, and I draw it as this surface within my off-shell phase space. So this is the space of on-shell configurations. On-shell here just refers to Gauss, no equations of motion, because it's in a canonical setting. So the next piece is this flux form. Since our boundaries are along the u direction, the only piece that we care about is, for real is this one. This one is actually mathematically a bit more spicy. But we will neglect it because we will not have boundaries in the along the sphere in this topic. So once we integrate this form, we get the flux map. So this was a form. This is a map. It's a corner term because this is a total derivative, and it's just what you expect. The smear electric fields through the corner. So we want to interpret this flux map as a map from our phase space into the dual of the Lie algebra, like any momentum map. And the image of this map on shell, so when restricted to on shell configurations, is what I call the on shell flux space. So this is the allowed values on shell of the electric fluxes. What are they? Well, in the semi, this is a little harder than one thinks to actually prove, but it's not too hard. In the semi simple case, one gets two copies of the dual of the Lie algebra on the sphere. What are they? Just E final and E initial, except that up to mathematical subtleties, I can identify this dual through the trace and the integral with the E. In the abelian case, things are a bit more interesting because there is a Gauss law and reducible configurations and so on. And so what one finds is that the result is that one up to the fact that this pair must annihilate constant gauge transformation, which is a signature of charge conservation in this context. I'm not allowing charges to flow out by hand just because it makes the talk simpler, and that's why this comes out. So charges can be here on this surface that they don't consider and have to get out there just it's put by hand in a sense. But it reflects in this algebraic consequence. Okay, so what is the main theorem? We have all the ingredients. We have the on-shell fluxes. So the theorem says that given an on-shell flux, so a pair of initial and final electric fields on the two corner spheres, we take its cage orbit, so the coadjoint orbit of these fluxes, and we look at the set of on-shell configurations that whose flux is in these orbits. So this is this space over here, so the pre-image of an orbit through the flux map in C. And if you quotient this space by the action of all gauge transformation, even those that act at the corner, you find the symplectic space. This is what we call super selection sector. So is the set, again, is the set of on-shell configuration whose flux belongs to the given orbit modulo all the gauge. And this is how you can think of it. So this squiggly line is just to say this is what reduction does for you. So let's look at this in pictures. We have our off-shell phase space, the on-shell configurations, which we split into sectors associated to a coadjoint orbit of a flux. And when we quotient the gauge, we find this line, which is also divided in sectors. So what is that line? It's our fully reduced phase space, which is the space of all on-shell configurations modulo all the gauge there is. And this is the disjoint union of these super selection sectors, which are each of them is symplectic. And this will be Poisson. So this is Poisson because the algebra of observable has a center. What is the center is the Casimirs that determine those coadjoint orbits. So this is talks very nicely to other talks about the coadjoint orbits and the Casimirs. So this is precisely what is happening here. So I hope this, if there are questions up to here, maybe it's good to get them. OK. So now, what about, yeah? So I will get there in a second. So what are the Casimirs I'm talking about? I will get to there in a moment. So we will see the abelian case will be super simple. In the non-abelian, it's kind of obvious how to generalize it. So in fact, here we go. What is the orbit? So in this case, the Casimirs are the value of the initial and final electric fields, so these initial and final fluxes. Since the coadjoint action in abelian case is trivial, these are just the fluxes themselves are the Casimirs in this case. The value of the initial and final electric fluxes are my Casimirs. An alternative labeling is in terms of the final flux, for example, which is often put to zero at I plus, so that's why I chose this one. And then we have the difference of the fluxes. This difference is, as well known, the electromagnetic memory, which computes the kick in the velocity of a particle hit by radiations through scry. So this is a Laplacian, and this is a gradient. Now, in the non-abelian case, the orbits are non-point-like. So the Casimirs will be the modulo square of the electric field. So by modulo square, I mean in the Lie algebra. But the point is that since they're not point-like anymore, their difference doesn't have any obvious geometrical meaning. So one has to be a little careful about identifying this difference as a gauge invariant geometrical object, because the gauge properties of these objects are very complicated in principle. So if the orbits I represent them as these two circles, the differences between points on the two orbits are rather wild, behave rather wildly. So one has to keep in mind this about the non-abelian case. Okay, so up to now, I have dealt with everything from a manifestly gauge invariant perspective. I've never had to fix any gauge nor anything like that. But it was also very implicit. So now I want to be more explicit and try to see whether we find some soft charges hiding somewhere. So far what I did was to do symplectic reduction in one big step, but Michele was emphasizing that there is a nice way to understand this reduction as a two-step process, where first one reduces the subgroup. We can think of it as the bulk gauge transformation that do not act on the corners. They're those that leave our fluxes untouched. So this is what this is saying, is the gauge transformation that annihilate the fluxes. So this is an ideal at the level of the Lie algebra or a normal subgroup at the level of the group action. And we can think of this group as a subgroup of gauge transformation which are generated just by the Gauss constraint. So the flux is not take, is not playing any role here. And that's why we call this first step, when we reduce just by the action of these gauge transformations, constraint reduction. And this is what I want to focus now. So the arrival point will be a symplectic space, not a Poisson space, a symplectic space. The price to pay is that there is a residual action of gauge transformation at the corners that I will have to take into account at the end. But this space is interesting, as we will see. But to describe it, I need a little bit more to set up the stage a little bit. So let's look at how we want to parameterize our phase space. So the way we can do this is the following. We parameterize any A and E as a gauge fixed one and the gauge transform as, plus the gauge transformations that takes me from this gauge fixed configuration to the one I'm interested in studying. So I write it like this. Probably this should be V minus, the arrow should go the other way. But so this is a gauge transformation, but it's a field-dependent one in the sense that it's the object that takes me to from my configurations of interest to the corresponding gauge fixed one. Now, as everybody does, we choose the AU equals zero gauge condition on Scribe because it's particularly nice. What is the necessary dressing factor in this case? Is a Wilson line that takes me from one reference corner along the null direction to the point where I am at. So this is this path order integral. Now, one nice observation is that if I evaluate this dressing at the other end of the corner, this becomes a Wilson line that goes from one component of the corner to the other one. And this object will be invariant under G0 because G0 acts trivially on the two corners. So I will expect that after first stage reduction, these not only the underlying gauge fix E and A survive first stage reduction, but also this lambda should survive first stage reduction. So these are the zero modes of Sucheta, essentially. So let's see what happens when we compute this. So we take our omega, we compute it on shell, and we compute it in this form. So every A and E is written as a gauge fix guy times the associated dressing. The first piece is, of course, the Ashtekar-Stroebel piece, because it's just the AU equals zero formula for what we had. But we say this lambda, we expect it to survive. And in fact, it does. So we have this extra piece, which is a cotangent bundle of the sphere gauge group, not the corner gauge group, which is two copies, but the sphere one. So this might be a little puzzling, but the puzzle is partially resolved by the fact that this lambda is bilocal because it knows about both ends, both corners. It's a Wilson line that links them. And this also explains, we will see what is the left and right action on this group. So of course, these formulas appear many times during this week. So in Laura's talk, this was the hard sector and the soft sector over here. In Kaja's talk, this was the corner BV, BFV structure. And also in other talks, for sure, the same object has appeared many times. So this derivation was heuristic, but one can actually prove that this constraint-reduced phase space, which is the space of on-shell configurations modulo the constraint group generated by the Gauss constraint, is given by this extension of the Ashtekar-Stroebel space. In the abelian case, we have an actual global result. This might be a little confusing, but the right thing to put here is the Lie algebra, not the Lie group. And this then is a global result. OK, so what are the residual gauge transformations on this space? We have the corner gauge transformations that act at the final corner and the initial corner, and they act like this. AI transforms only under psi on the initial sphere, so without a U dependence. That's the residual gauge. And E and lambda transform nicely in the following way. So it's a bilocal action. E final transform only under psi final, the G final, and lambda transform on the left and on the right under the final and the initial, because it's this bilocal object. So the left and right action on G have this very physical interpretation of being gauge transformation on the two ends. So now we can look at which charge generates these transformations on this space. And is this one written down here? This is our flux map from before, now written in our gauge, taking care of lambda, which dresses a few objects. And what we see is that here we have that this memory. So D0 stands for the zero mode in U. So it's just the integral in U of the expression inside the parentheses. And in the abelian case, this du goes out, so it gives me the difference between the initial and the final divergence of A. So this is the other way of talking about memory that people love. And here it appears in this form after this gauge fixing. The only issue is that we see that unless we put E final to zero, which is sometimes a physically good thing to do, but unless we do that, doesn't generate something nice in a sense, because it would generate the diagonal gauge group, but it's not a normal gauge group, a subgroup, so it doesn't have particularly nice properties. So thinking of these as memory in general, this memory as a momentum map is not always the nicest thing when the final flux is non-zero. So here I just show how to recover the previous result in this formulation. In general, this is related by the Gauss constraint to the initial and final fluxes parallel transported as appropriately. These two terms cancel, and one is left with xi in pair with e in, and e final pair with xi final. So is what we expected. So, and the gauge orbits of these guys are precisely the super selection sectors. Modulo the subtlety that the final flux is determined by the initial one and the zero mode, of course. So, but these you all know. So let me summarize. What we discovered is that the fully reduced radiative phase space as cry is not a symplectic manifold, but a Poisson manifold, and fully reduced here is the keyword. The symplectic leaves of this Poisson manifold are this flux superselection sector labeled by gauge orbit of the initial and final electric fluxes. I don't have the time to go into the details, but why I'm calling them superselection sectors. So superselection is a consequence in quantum mechanics and field theory and quantum foundations, is a consequence of tracing over the degrees of freedom in a complementary region, or in general, some complementary degrees of freedom that you can pick as you wish. In field theory, it's nice to think of them as the outside world of a certain region. And this creates a sense, like it can, not always, but sometimes this tracing over gives you a means that you're neglecting some observables, and the algebra of observables you're left with has a center. And this center, in this case, are these Casimirs that I was talking about, that Rob asked about a moment ago. And this structure shows up in the entanglement entropy of gauge theories. This was work with William Donnelly and Cassini, Wirth, and Rosabal. And in fact, it was also mentioned by Laurent in the first slides of his talk, and also by Anthony, I think. So this was a parenthesis going back to what I presented now, going back to memory. We saw that in the abelian case, memory is a good superselection label as the difference of these two groups. Not so much so in the abelian case, because in the sense that it doesn't have as nice a geometrical meaning, but it can be used. It just wouldn't survive. It doesn't have any nice transformation properties under gauge transformations, like the residual gauge transformations. That's the issue there. Finally, we show that constraint reduction, so if we stop, we don't reduce by the action of the corner gauge group, but we just reduce by the bulk gauge group. What we find is a semi-reduced phase space, which appears to be an extension of the Ashtekar-Strobel phase space by a single T star of G of the sphere. So this means that Ashtekar-Strobel per se doesn't fit nicely in our two-stage reduction picture, because it's not the off-shell guy, it's not the first reduced guy, and it's not the finally reduced one. It's somehow sitting in the middle where you do first-stage reduction, and then you reduce only one copy of the of the corner gauge transformation, not both of them. So he's kind of sitting in the middle. He's a bit of a weird guy. So this space now supports residual corner gauge symmetries, these extended space, which are generated by these soft charges, like in Kazhestok. And if one wants to speculate a bit farther from these results, one might want to go in this direction. Soft theorems become then a statement of the residual corner gauge covariance, because they appear within this not partial semi-reduced phase space over here. And the conservation of the soft charge, you might want to reread it as a statement that scattering unfolds within a given superselection sector, where the fluxes at I naught are kept fixed. So they have so this is the superselection sector where this happens. So, but this, of course, has to be proven. This is just what these results might be hinting towards. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have.
Proviamo.
Funziona ancora?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Aldo. I want to clarify something about this extension of the phase space you're talking about. A few years back, Ashtekar and Beatrice Bonga pointed out that in the presence of sources, this Ashtekar-Streubel phase space picks up a corner term, which is related to memories and carries the Coulombic information. What you're recovering here, is it the same extension, or is it something different, apart from the non-abelian case? I mean, just in the
I must admit my ignorance. I missed that paper, so I should probably read it again.
Okay.
Well, read it, period.
Okay.
So I don't know, but thanks
if
for
it's
the...
it's compatible, the result...
It sounds, what you just said sounds perfectly compatible. So maybe it's the same... Maybe it's the same result. Here I recovered it from this other framework, but if... I don't see why it should be different. So this is also what Susheta was telling about.
So they stress the importance of including sources, and this is also what you have in mind?
No, this would be true also in vacuum.
Yeah, so maybe you want to look at possible discrepancies.
Maybe okay, thanks. That was the point then, yes.
Other question? Yeah, Andrea.
Andrea?
Nice.
Okay, good. So almost like a curiosity. So you're saying that in the abelian case, you have problems in interpreting it as a memory with jumping from one superselection to sector to another. But there are some analog of the non-abelian memory effects, no?
So it's okay, so maybe, right. So I think to clarify the language, so here I'm focusing on this surface, which has two corners. Well, one corner with two connected components. What I'm here, what the superselection sector associated to scry is the pair of fluxes. So, however, if I look at the superselection structure on the sigma, the space-like sigma, is just given by the initial flux. So indeed, this is kind of consistent because we can glue these three surfaces in a way that the superselection match between, and in that sense you can talk about as a transition. This surface encodes a transition between superselection sectors. But then I would think of them as superselection sectors in here and over there. There is no transition happening there because in that case the superselection is the pair of them. I don't know, it's just a subtle, maybe a language issue, but that's that helps to.
But did I understand correctly? So some of the memory is telling you what is the jump between one corner and the other.
Exactly. Yes.
And then you may use it to select to associate it to what happened. So who triggered this transition, right?
I can use it. I didn't hear.
So the memory is really measuring what happened in the null surface, mm-hmm. because you measure the configuration of the beginning and the configuration at the end, essentially.
Exactly.
But so why is it problematic to do it in non-abelian case?
Oh, so it's not. You can do it, and this is. It appears sorry. It appears here. It's this term. This is written in the non-abelian case. Okay. The u doesn't get out in this case. The derivative, so it's not really just the difference of these phases, but it's still the same object. So you can do this, but if you ask what is the group theoretic interpretation of this quantity, then it's not as nice because it will not have a nice gauge transformation property. Being an integral of something, so a pictorial way to see it is what I've drawn here. If my initial and if my initial and final orbits are not point-like, the difference between points on these orbits is a wild object. So under gauge transformation, my memory will go from this one to that one.
Is it clear that it's not? Because there is this color memory effect in which you take two particles which have a color, and then a flux passes, and then there is a relative phase that they pick up. So it's clear that it's not there.
I know this. So this is the paper of Strominger and Anna Maria, I forgot another. Maybe I forgot the last person. But there's something I don't understand about their manipulations. They seem to pull out this du and then see a net, like a formula similar to this one. I don't know exactly what's going on there. But here, the problem is that since I'm integrating over scry and it doesn't factorize in two pieces, this is a way to see that things don't transform particularly nicely in this case.
Thanks.
You have a question from Lee, virtually. Lee, can you?
Hello, Lee.
Hello, everybody. In a non-abelian case, there can be closed loops if you identify the two corners with each other, so that you get thermal effects. Have you looked into that? The closed loop large gauge transformations of the Chern-Simon form.
Closed loops between what and what, sorry?
Between the configuration space and on the corner and the second configuration space on the corner. If we take those two Hilbert spaces and identify them and trace, so we're describing a thermal situation, then there are indeed thermal loops that contribute to taking the trace of the temperature continue to imaginary values, and you get a beta for a thermal state.
Yeah, no, I haven't thought about looking into that.
Okay.
Okay, thanks Aldo for his talk. Thank you very much.